You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com, your everything resource for the security industry. You're listening to SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com. I'm your host, Jeff Cole, editor of SecurityInfoWatch. In this episode, number 14 for Wednesday, July 18, 2007, we have a neat program for you today. We have an exclusive look at GSO 2010, which is a top-level security event being held out in beautiful San Jose, California, on August 22nd through 23rd, just coming up in the next month. With us today on the program, we have three people. We have Ray Bernard, who is a well-known security consultant with over 20 years in the industry. Ray, of course, has been writing for Security Technology and Design magazine for years and has a monthly column in that book on convergence. We also have James Conner, the former senior manager of global security systems for Symantec Corporation. James is now a principal of NTN Secure, a security consulting firm, again, specializing in converged physical and logical security solutions. James and Ray are going to talk a little bit about this GSO 2010 event, which is obviously going to hit them on some very strategic things that security managers need to be concerning themselves with. And it also creates a technology workshop where you can actually see hands-on how convergence really works. This is going to be held on the campus of Adobe out there in San Jose. Following that, we also have John Petsy on the line. John Petsy is CEO of Privaris, and Privaris, of course, is one of the sponsors of this GSO. John is going to talk to us a bit about their Plus ID FOB system that emulates basically card systems with a biometric attached. So instead of bolting on a big black fingerprint reader onto the wall, you put this in your pocket. Following that, we also have an interview with new technology, and the technology is called Smart Storage from 3VR. We'll have Tim Ross, their executive vice president, on the phone to talk about the challenges of video storage and why video analytics, and video tagging is going to be so important in the future. So that's the program for today. We're going to go ahead and jump into an interview with James and Ray from GSO 2010. You can get more information on that event at gsoevents.com.
So, James, I got to ask you, because everyone asks this question, why is it GSO Global Security Operations 2010 when it's 2007? Did you guys just do the math wrong?
No, good question. This event is really designed for global and even national security managers. It's designed to instruct people in implementing security changes or initiatives on a large scale. And we believe that if people or managers wait till 2010 to get started, they're really not going to be able to implement these kinds of strategies, and they really need to focus on 2010 with the deployment of these technologies. Because most security managers are living today with technologies and operations that were implemented, it's important to look ahead and start working on them now.
Okay. Looking on the website, it looks like you guys are doing the workshop on day one and the technology lab on day two. It says that the workshop is requiring preparation for attendees. Why is that, Ray?
Well, the workshop is not the typical collection of PowerPoint presentations that you usually see for security events. It's a very highly interactive workshop where the sessions are designed for the attendees, the security managers, to make actual progress on critical aspects of their security program. And to make the kind of progress that we're intending, it requires some preparation up front to get the maximum benefit from each workshop session.
Okay. Now, you guys have a tech lab, and obviously at most sort of industry shows or events, it's usually just tabletops with a product sitting on top. Why the tech lab concept?
We're going to focus and talk about hands-on versus real versus theoretical approach, and we're going to be committed to discussing visionary approaches that have practical applications and that actually really work.
So is it that the attendees will actually get hands-on with this technology and in a situation where it's actually been integrated, correct?
Yes, every attendee will have an opportunity to see technology in action, as well as put it through any sort of ad hoc tests that may be unique to his or her environment. In addition, they will also be exposed to these examples with their peers and invited to collaborate with other attendees to sort of envision potential solutions for their security operations.
Okay. Now, this is a pretty limited event. I mean, we're not talking something the scope of ISC or an ASA show. Why have you limited the number of technology companies, especially I think you have a company specific to each category of technology, such as one for access, one for video management, et cetera. You know, what are your thoughts on that, James?
Yeah, again, this will give the attendee the ability to see really each sponsored technology as part of a total security solution, not really in a side-by-side battle over features, but rather, you know, when introduced into the context, will highlight the real value of that technology and the total and the attendee's security program.
Okay.
And also, I should add that it's definitely a hands-on lab where the attendees will participate in some of the demonstration scenarios that show how the technologies are used to address important security operations tasks and incident response. And so we need to have all of the technologies integrated and working together as one system. Otherwise, you couldn't use them in that fashion.
Okay. Now, let's talk about the workshop. We talked about a bit about the tech lab. Ray, I understand you're going to be hitting on issues such as security awareness and business alignment. Can you share a little bit about the kind of stuff you're going to hit on there?
Well, yes. Security awareness is generally thought of as what you do with regard to security training, you know, posters, that kind of thing. But the context for security has changed in recent years. If you go back a few years, security was basically situated on the corporate hierarchy somewhere between cleaners and plant maintenance. Today, it's a very different situation with board level and senior executive attention on security. And also, there's quite a strong current regulatory environment. And so these are all factors that have changed the security landscape. The number of security stakeholders and their roles in security involvement have changed. And so now there are a lot more security stakeholders at the executive level, and you have to take a look at security awareness from a different perspective, because anything you do, any statement you make, any action that you take has an impact on the security awareness of these stakeholders. And so that's one of the things that we'll be addressing. And similarly, with business alignment, as security itself and the security departments become more elevated in the organization, it's important for them to function more like the way the rest of the business units and departments function. And so to be fully aligned with the business and have the, you know, reduce security gaps, then we have to do the kind of some of the preparation work and identifying factors in the business. How do you more closely align security with the business? Which executives should be participating in decisions? I mean, for example, the decisions about risk and risk acceptance in the past have mostly fallen on the shoulders of the security managers. But they don't own the assets. They're not the custodians of those assets. It's the folks who are in manufacturing and operations and so on. And actually, they depend on those assets and really should have a say in what risk is accepted or not and what risk measures are applied. So to really be fully aligned with the business, you have to understand a lot of the components of the business. And so that's one of the things that we address in the workshop.
James, I understand Ray mentioned that you're going to be addressing the issue of total cost of ownership. Can you give us any sort of light into how you're approaching that these days?
Sure. I'm going to be building on some of the strategic concepts that Ray will lead and discuss. This is going to discuss some of the practical issues and problems with the execution of some of these, some of the higher level strategic stuff that Ray is going to be going over. I'm going to be focusing on a couple of topics. the roles of ROTCE, or the return on security investment, and total cost of ownership in the security operations. In this discussion, I want to attempt to bring into context the concepts of building real business cases through the use of ROI and total cost of ownership. But also, and maybe more importantly, I want to discuss with our attendees understanding the building and value proposition of their technology decisions. Most companies today don't really understand their total cost of ownership with deployments of security worldwide, sometimes managed under facilities and other ways of sort of bifurcating and not having a centralized way to look at total cost of ownership and monies that are being expended. It makes it difficult or impossible to calculate ROI if they don't really have an understanding of that. So we're going to discuss some of that. In the security manager as a strategic partner, we want to address moving from a commodity manager to understanding the business impact of security technology and decisions, and alignment of those security strategies, value, and cost sort of all put into context. And the importance of this, I don't think, can really be overstated in the attempting to gain the support of everyone and transforming our security projects into real business value statements.
Well, guys, I appreciate the pre-briefing on GSO 2010. Of course, we're going to be doing some more of these on the SIW Radio podcast from SecurityInfoWatch.com. For folks who are looking for more information, they can go to GSOevents.com. And, Ray, what's a phone number that people could call to get more information?
949-831-6788.
6788.
Yeah.
Okay. So, and an email, if that's easier?
The email is, actually, I have to go to the website and look it up. The email is updates@gsoevents.com.
Okay, and that's how you get in touch. Well, gentlemen, I know you two have to run. We also have on the line with us today John Pepsi of Priveris to talk about the technology. Of course, they are one of the sponsors of this GSO program that's coming up in August. And we're going to talk with John about Plus ID. But first, Ray, very much appreciated. And likewise, James, thanks for joining us on the call.
Thank you.
So, John, tell us about Priveris Plus ID. I understand this is a biometric technology that can emulate a variety of card technologies. Is that basic gist of it?
Sure, that is. Let me give you a quick understanding of it, hopefully. Typically, when you say biometrics, an image forms in everybody's mind, right? People have been involved in the industry. It means screwing some type of a black box beside every door or gate or portal or computer where you want to use
sure.
biometrics. It's very much been considered a fixed-mounted asset with pretty heavy installation costs and disruption. What we've been able to do is put biometrics into people's pocket. We've created a fob, size of a key fob that you'd have to unlock your car, and put the biometric processing directly in it. So when you want to complete a transaction, like getting in a building or logging onto a computer, you pull out your fob, press a button, wipe your finger across it, and you verify your identity against your template that's stored in the device. So once there's a match, it's proved the rightful owner has the device, and then the device can output signals that are compatible with standard infrastructure, and the device has the capability to output signals for physical access, all of the standard type of access card formats. And it also works in logical access environment. That's why we're excited to be part of the GSO event, because our technology really focuses on convergence. When Plus ID connects with a computer, it presents itself as a standard smart card, something that, for example, the Windows operating system is compatible with. It presents as a smart card, but it has one additional thing. It will not complete the smart card credential transaction until you match your finger to it. So here you have a way with a personal device to use the strong points of biometrics to be able to prove identity and then interact with your world to gain access.
Now, we were talking a little bit earlier, I think, about the problem that there are almost too many tokens or identification methods for identity today. I mean, we're almost overwhelmed, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. And in fact, there's been, you know, some recent headlines out there. You know, one was, I think, a goof on Rodney Dangerfield. Take my passwords, please, right? I keep a personal track being in the industry. I've got 34 passwords. But, you know, as we look to improve security, I think security professionals will tell you that if you have lots of different devices and credentials and passwords to remember, you're creating a less secure environment, not more secure. And what one of our goals has been to find a way to consolidate, you know, and aggregate all of your credentials in a single secure solution that someone can use. So, you know, one of the ways we look at it is it's a wallet for all your credentials. And if you have all your credentials in one wallet, you want that secure. So it's a wallet that, in order to unlock it or to open it, you have to match your fingerprint to it. So you gain the security and the identity, you know, verification via biometrics, but the device has the ability to hold different passwords and different types of credentials to eliminate the need of having lots of different cards, passwords, tokens, et cetera. You know, for example, it does one-time password as well on a small LCD window. So if, you know, our goal has been if you've adopted an infrastructure, we'd like to show you where you could be compatible with that existing infrastructure and not have to swap out all your existing systems. And that's some of the things we'll demonstrate in the tech lab out at GSO.
Again, that was John Petsy, CEO of Privaris, and before that, Ray Bernard and James Connor, two leading consultants in the industry, highly focused on convergence solutions, and who are aiding in this GSO 2010 event. Again, get more information at gsoevents.com. Now we turn to an interview we did last week with Tim Ross, Executive Vice President over at 3VR. 3VR is, of course, a video analytics and storage solutions company, and they're going to talk about their new smart storage technology, which kind of jumped on our radar when it was announced last week. So here we are.
Tim, if you can fill us in a little bit about the history of 3VR's technology and about your indexing systems, and then let's talk about where the smart storage system fits in.
Sure. It's great to be here with you, Jeff. 3VR is the pioneers of searchable surveillance. We're the first company to combine a traditional video management system with a video search engine and video analysis technology. The company was founded to really address the gap between the video information that people can currently collect and the ability for people to quickly and easily find the information they're looking for within those large archives. 3VR uses video analytics to catalog, index, and structure information that gets stored in our video search engine. This search engine provides novel ways of organizing, displaying, and sifting through volumes of video information so you can look for specific people, specific text, or specific types of objects.
Now, we spoke quite a few months ago. You kind of compared it to Google and how it indexes pages and identifies really the relevant information on a page. So when you do a search, it doesn't look for every word V in there, but it looks for the critical stuff, whether that's maybe network, camera, or whatever term you're searching for. How does that work when applied to video?
Well, talk to any investigator, and what they'll tell you is that certain parts of the video are much more important to their investigation than others. A person standing at a bank teller window conducting a transaction may stand there for a minute, but there's a moment in time where we see the best image of that person's face. Same thing with vehicles passing through and their license plates. What a lot of the challenge has been traditionally is how do you separate and manage the storage of that critical information separate from information that's of lower priority, given the constraints that exist with hard drives and storage.
And of course, you guys are out with a smart storage system today. So let's talk about how are you trying to solve that problem?
Well, what we've done is everyone knows has heard about how 3VR is using video analytics and search to address difficult investigation and video management problems. What people haven't heard as much about is how we're using those same search and video analysis technologies to really revolutionize storage. What 3VR is doing is in real time, we're looking through every video event that's happening, and we're tagging this information and finding the best representative images of each event, and we're storing that in a searchable archive that can be kept separate from the video itself. So while you may store a few months' worth of video on a 3DR system, you can also store on the same system years and years' worth of critical events like representative images of faces from transactions.
So let's talk about this. Someone purchased in one of these 3DR systems with smart storage. They set it up with their cameras connected to it. What starts happening? It starts recording. Maybe they've set it for a monthly life cycle on the video. What happens there?
Just like a conventional recorder, the 3DR system is sort of recording and storing and displaying video. But unlike a conventional recorder, every single time 3DR sees activity happening, we're creating a record of that activity and storing it in a database. Let me give you an example. A person walks up to a transaction. We're not just to conduct a transaction at a bank. We're not just storing that video. We're also storing the time, the place, the best shot of that person's face, as well as biometric information about that person's face so we can track their identity over time. All of that information is being put into our search engine and is being stored in our smart storage architecture.
Now, how much storage, so maybe we save those key events, what sort of file sizes are we talking about? Are we going to eat up the hard drive space with the archived information, or?
Well, what you've always seen is a trade-off that's been asked by end users to degrade, essentially, video quality in order to achieve storage durations. And this is because conventional systems largely had no understanding of what was contained within the video itself, so it needed to treat all parts of the video equally. Because 3DR systems intelligently understand what parts of the video or what images are most representative of that event, we can intelligently store those events and those images in very different ways. So just like a conventional system, we may store video for a period of 2 months. On top of that, what you're going to have is years worth of representative images from each of those events, including things like best shots of people's faces and the biometric signatures associated with those faces.
Now, we kind of talked about this before. Today's world, drives are cheap, and getting cheaper, it seems, if you kind of look at the prices on sites like Newegg and Geeks.com. If drives are cheap, why not just hang on to all the video at high res? And if not, if that doesn't kind of factor into your plan, what are the higher sizes, 500 gigs for a couple hundred bucks or less, cost of drives mean for your system?
Well, every year, the cost of drive is getting cheaper, and that's better for everyone. It's allowing people to store larger and longer periods of video. What you find, though, is there's two weaknesses in this approach. One is that despite the decline in price of hard drives, it's still relatively cost prohibitive to have systems that store more than a few months worth of video. So what we're doing is today addressing a very real problem by providing access to years worth of critical events. The second problem, though, is let's say that you have the money and you do make the investment in building a very, very large storage array of video. The question is, how do you actually find information from within that large archive? If someone wants to know whether or not a specific person has been in and around their facility over a period of the last 2 years, having 2 years' worth of video doesn't give you that answer. You need to couple that storage architecture with search technology that can intelligently find information that's related to your investigation.
Okay. So if we're talking about going into an investigation, maybe a crime ring that's been hitting some big box retailers, or terrorist casing critical infrastructure or soft target. And this is basically going to be able to change to go back and look way back in time, I guess, but also look for specific things, whereas before we may have just been scanning through hours and hours of video at what maybe archived at low resolution.
Exactly. There's two problems that people were facing. One is that most of the time you didn't have any of the video information at all. It had been all erased because the limitations on the storage architecture. Two is that even to the extent you had evidence, it was of very poor quality and there was no way to search it. What we try to do is take a three-prong approach that lets you store more information, at much higher quality and to make it searchable so you can conduct fast, long-ranging investigations and build enforceable cases with good evidence.
So with the smart storage, this is a technology that would run on one of your units, or is this something separate? How does that work? How is this implemented?
All 3VR systems come ship standard with 3VR smart storage and include RAID as well.
Okay. So, all right, well, that's Tim Ross again, co-founder, executive vice president for 3VR, talking about their new smart storage system designed to help you hang on to the video you need and lose the stuff you don't, being that we're all obviously confined by amount of hard drives we can buy, even if they are cheap. So, Tim, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Jeff.
Again, a big thanks to Tim Ross of 3VR for joining us on the program to talk about their smart storage solution. That's it for episode 14 of SIW Radio from SecurityInfoWatch.com. We'll be back next week with more on technology and security.